off and launched themselves toward the exit. Seth whooped as they set off.
They wouldn't deploy the beacon unless there's something in the area worth looking into.
So they found something?
Ivan's heart beat faster at the thought.
Well, they found something, as opposed to empty space or gravel. The beacon indicates a valid working stake and warns off any other ships. But if it's all carbonaceous chondrite, it's not worth diddly. Next step will be a deep radar survey.
Ivan remembered most of this from his training, although at his level they didn't go into a lot of technical detail. The courses concentrated more on what the bridge crew would want you to do and how to do it, and less on why or how it worked. They arrived at the cargo hold and grabbed pressure suits. A small voltage caused the fabric to expand, allowing them to easily don the suits. They dressed, checked each other's fit, then turned off the trickle charge. The material of the suit immediately contracted, providing the required pressure to counteract the vacuum of space without the associated risk of an air leak. The suit material was also very slightly porous, so that sweat would evaporate into space, rather than pooling in the suit. Gloves, boots, backpack, and helmet all snapped onto no-fail connectors. It was supposed to be impossible to get it wrong, or have a bad seal. No one, of course, wanted to test that assumption, so all EVAs involved a buddy check. Ivan and Seth inspected each other's setup once more to ensure proper fit and function. Then they moved through the airlock into the zero-pressure section of the hold. Ivan thought he felt his skin press more tightly against the suit fabric.
Over here,
Seth said over the radio, and motioned to one end. Ivan followed him, paying extreme attention to his jetpack controls. The technology had improved immensely since the early days of spaceflight, and control was now far more intuitive. But you still didn't want to make a mistake in a small space with hard metal boundaries. Seth came to a floating stop beside an object that looked something like an old-fashioned marine buoy, about 6 feet in diameter and 20 feet long, generally cylindrical. The beacon would expand to twice that length once in space as it deployed its antennae. The beacon was secured to the bulkhead by a series of metal straps. Seth pointed to the far side of the device.
Releases are on that side, Ivan. Start from the top. Free each one as I say to, okay?
Got it. It took only moments to work down the restraints and free the beacon. Seth worked a panel, and a scissors lift slowly extended the beacon from the wall.
Open the hold door, Ivan.
Ivan went blank for a second, then looked around and spotted the control panel on the far wall. Feeling a moment of embarrassment for the brain fart, he pushed off and drifted over to the panel. He attached the carabiner of his leash to the nearby stanchion, scanned the directions printed beside the panel, then worked the controls. Slowly, majestically, the hold doors swung open. Despite himself, Ivan was entranced by the view of open space with no planets or man-made objects anywhere to be seen. Too entranced, as it turned out, a mocking comment from Seth brought him back to reality.
Whenever you're finished looking at the pretty lights, Ivan, I'd like to get this done.
What? Ivan spun around in place, coming up against the end of his rope. He rebounded at the sudden tension and found himself being slowly wrapped up in his tether. Untangling himself, Ivan glared at Seth, his face hot. Seth grinned back.
For the price of one dessert, I didn't see anything.
Ivan growled, then waved a hand. Fine. I hope it's tapioca. He grabbed his line and hauled himself to the bulkhead where he grabbed a handhold. Seth spared a glance to make sure Ivan was secured and out of the way, then announced,
"Launching beacon. Stay clear."
Seth worked the controls, and the beacon began moving out of the hold, propelled by attitude jets. Ivan alternately watched the beacon and a readout on the panel until the beacon had reached the desired distance from the ship. Their job complete, Ivan closed the hold doors and they returned to shipboard. Seth pressed the intercom and reported completion.
Thanks, guys.
Dante responded.
Beacon is now doing self-check. We'll activate it as soon as we've finished our sweep, and we'll be in business. Habring is still in spin-up, so head back to on-axis commons and park it.
The task had been a simple one, but interesting, and had kept Ivan's mind busy. Now, with only more waiting ahead of him, he resumed brooding about the financial situation. He knew that the crew would vote for the captain's plan. The alternative would be devastating for everyone. The odds on a 9-month tour would be in their favor, but with a sinking feeling in his stomach, Ivan acknowledged that odds only meant maybe. 3 months of missed pay, owing that money to Seth, on top of possibly losing most or all of his share, would be all but impossible to dig his way out of. Ivan blinked rapidly to keep his vision clear as he trudged back to the common room. 5. Being an asteroid miner. 3 weeks later, the mood in the ship was considerably gloomier. 12 asteroids of significant size had been scanned, none of which contained enough ore even to cover the costs of the trip. Just the same, they'd extracted what they could find and sent it on a homeward trajectory with a beacon attached. Enough of those small strikes could still add up. Meanwhile, the crew had voted for the extended tour, and it was beginning to look like the extra few months would be necessary. Conversation in the crew area was desultory and heavy on short sentences. People sat by themselves and stared into their cups. Even the never-ending poker game had begun to suffer from poor attendance. Ivan looked up as Seth entered the room, the man's gait too slow and plodding for half-G gravity. Seth sat down across from him, and Ivan raised his cup in greeting.
"We have 4 rocks we can check from this spot before we have to move the ship again," Seth said. "You and I will be humping the deep radar rig around next shift. 10 will be controller."
Ivan rolled his eyes at the thought of working another shift with Davies. The man had decided for some reason that Sprout wasn't an adequately demeaning nickname and had spent the last several weeks trying to come up with a new one. Many of his suggestions scatological in nature. Ivan assumed it had to be out of boredom and stress because there was just no reason for that level of antagonism. Unless it was his refusal to join the interminable poker games. He checked the time on the wall display. "Guess I'd better go get ready. Meet you at the lock." Ivan nodded to Seth and headed for his quarters. Crew quarters were located in the Habring. The ship schematics referred to them as staterooms, but no one who saw one would ever think to use that word. The rooms were about the size of a first-class double-bunk cabin from the age of passenger trains. Upper and lower single bunk beds could be folded into the wall to make room for a bench seat. The fold-out table could accommodate 2 people, as long as they liked each other. Storage under the seat was adequate for the basic necessities appropriate to crew. A small sink and mirror inset into the wall completed the accommodations. Toilets and showers, however, were in a common area central to the crew quarters. Ivan was pretty sure the captain and senior officers rated something larger, but didn't expect to ever get a chance to confirm his theory. A quick clean-up with a sponge ensured that he wouldn't smell up a spacesuit too badly, then into the standard shipboard outfit, and he was off to the main airlock. Seth and Ten stood waiting, both having already donned their suits. Ivan never failed to be impressed at how quickly the veterans could handle things that still made him feel like a thumb-fingered idiot. He dressed as quickly as he could, consistent with safety, then submitted to inspection.
"All good,"
Ten said.
"You'll make spaceman yet."
Ivan glanced at him uncertain. For Ten, that was so mild a jibe as to almost qualify as a compliment. They piled into the airlock and Ten activated the cycle. Ivan could feel the tension of the suit fabric as the air pressure dropped to 0 and his flesh tried to expand. Like the jetpacks, the suits were a significant improvement over the walking tombs used during the dawn of space travel. Intelligent environmental controls, electro-contractile materials, and electrostatic magnetic shielding made the modern spacewalk, if not actually safe, at least tolerably routine. The deep radar pod drifted 100 meters from the Astra, having been moved into position by the previous shift. The three jetted over to it and took up their stations.
First target,
Ten announced when everyone was ready. He gave a set of vectors, and Seth and Ivan scrambled to line up the equipment. The asteroid, an unimpressive rock in a nondescript area of the belt, hadn't been tagged with a beacon, so was considered a virgin. After scanning it, they would fly over in a 2-man scooter and attach a beacon to broadcast either the rock's failure as a source of riches or its status as a staked claim. A message to the central registry would obviate any temptation by other mining ships to replace the beacon with one of their own. In the modern era, any group known to have attempted such tactics would be blacklisted so thoroughly that they'd never be able to use public toilets, let alone conduct business outside atmosphere again. Once given the target, the AI was able to maintain a lock on the asteroid. A confirmation request flashed on Ivan's console, and he entered an affirmative. The deep radar pod emitted a series of pulses and listened for the echoes. By varying the frequency and pulse lengths, it built up a picture of the interior of the asteroid. The densities of different materials would indicate the probable composition, then sample drillings would confirm any flagged masses. The deep radar was nowhere near infallible, but it saved a lot of time by ruling out the total duds and indicating good candidates for sampling. Ivan was tasked with ensuring that the pod didn't drift during the analysis. The possibility was remote, given the presence of the AI, but if it did happen, it would invalidate an entire day's run. Seth monitored the results for each scan and ordered a follow-up if required. This latter job was as much art as science, and no one would trust it to an AI. The scanning run complete and their shift over, the three headed back to the Astra. 4 hours in a spacesuit was about as much as a person could handle. Beyond that, many people started to experience increasing itchiness. No physiological reason for it had ever been found. It just seemed to be one of those things. In the shower, Ivan cringed as Seth did his back-cracking thing again. Sarcasm didn't help, and anyway, Seth didn't seem to be doing it just to bug people. Ivan flexed his arm a couple of times. His old elbow injury bothered him occasionally, but at least it didn't make noises when he moved. Raoul, Will, and Aspasia entered the showers, looking as if they'd just finished a marathon.
"Bad day?" Seth said to them.
"Core samples," Aspasia replied. "Aiello had us drilling Rock 4 just in case the deep radar scans were off."
"And?" Raoul shook his head, expression downcast.
"If they were off, it was in the wrong direction. We found some ore, but I doubt it's going to prove out to anything worth filing a claim. We'll use the mining robots to extract the ore and send it back home with a beacon attached. Unless we were to find something else in the area." Ivan pressed his lips together but said nothing. He repeated his wife's statistics like a mantra. Too soon to give up. As many as 3 tours on average. Too soon to give up.
A week later, they'd finished prospecting all the rocks in the area, and the news was in. Aiello didn't have a good poker face at the best of times, and announcements weren't the best of times. He took a long, slow look around the common room.
"Sorry, guys. We've checked them all, and there's no shine. We'll be moving to another spot as soon as Astrogation has found a good clump of rocks worth visiting."
Aiello stood there for a moment longer, then shrugged and left. Ivan balled his fists on the table and put his forehead down on them. Logically, they weren't even halfway into their tour. It was far too early to give way to despair. As usual, logic didn't help. And anyway, To do three tours, they'd have to at least find enough to pay for this tour. His dinner sitting like a lump of coal in his stomach, Ivan said to Seth,
I'm going to turn in, write a letter to the family.
Seth nodded, and Ivan headed for his room. The gravity seemed to have been turned up to Jupiter standard, sucking his feet into the carpet with every step.
Hi, love. Well, we haven't struck it rich yet, but it's very early in the tour and no one seems concerned. I'd like to hit the earlier of your projections rather than the later, though. I'm looking forward to retiring to the French Riviera, or what's left of it. How are Josh and Susie? Do they ask about their dad? Tell them I've learned to fly. I can fly from one end of the ship to the other, down the middle. It's great fun.
Ivan leaned back from the keyboard. He couldn't bear to send an honest email, but had trouble thinking up the words for something upbeat. He stared at the note for several minutes, then reached over and saved the draft. He had until tomorrow morning anyway. To keep costs down, the Mad Astra only connected to Solnet once a day to send and receive updates. With a sigh, he put everything away and prepared for bed.
6. Trying another location. The move to the new location was virtually identical to the first one, except for a noticeable lack of bounce in people's steps. Ivan, once again, was first up on deep radar duty. The target of the day was a large, vaguely peanut-shaped rock with a smaller sibling in close proximity. The two rocks had so little relative motion and spin that Ivan couldn't tell initially if they were just passing by or were in some kind of mutual orbit. Target's locked, he announced. Seth took up position and 10 worked the controls. Another boring 4 hours watching radio waves propagate. Ivan followed 10's occasional instructions and otherwise let his mind drift. If he turned his back on the deep radar unit, the only item in the universe was the Mad Astra, floating in the distance. The sun glinted evenly off the oval of the ship, broken only by the 4 fusion nacelles around the stern. Mars was currently on the other side of the solar system, but Jupiter could be picked out with ease. It didn't quite show a disk, but at this distance, it glowed almost as brightly as the moon from Earth.
Take your time, Sprout. It's not like we're on duty or anything.
Ivan jerked as he realized that 10 had been talking.
Sorry, what?
Sleep on your own time, noob. Which will be soon, actually. Shift's over as soon as you can see your way clear to signing off the unit.
Nodding, Ivan reached for the console and logged out. He gave a thumbs up to Seth, who typed a few rapid commands, then pushed away from his seat. And with that, it was end of shift. Finally. Ivan, Seth, and 10 did a quick post-shutdown inspection, then gathered to jet back to the ship together. Ivan was surprised to see 3 space-suited figures approaching.
What the hell? 10 said. We didn't have another shift scheduled. What are you guys doing?
Aspasia's voice came back over the radio. As usual, her tone conveyed her disapproval of the universe and all its inhabitants.
Aiello called us up at the last minute. They want to rescan. Looks like you guys screwed up.
Horse maneuvers, Seth replied. No red lights at all.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, bucko.
Aspasia took a moment to bring herself to a dead stop.
Pretty sure I didn't volunteer to do this all on my own. Take it up with Aiello.
Weird.
10 muttered. I don't suppose there's any chance they're rescanning because they found something? Ivan couldn't keep the hope out of his voice.
That's certainly an alternative explanation.
Aspasia grinned at him, her face clearly visible through the helmet.
But I'm going to go with my theory.
As Aspasia, Will, and Raoul began set up for a full deep radar run, Ivan and his crewmates jetted back to the Astra. No one said anything. even the normally opinionated 10 Davies keeping his own counsel.
All crew to the common room.
The unscheduled announcement over the PA made everyone look up. Ivan's stomach clenched. He turned to Seth.
What now?
Are they going to extend the tour again?
Well, we've only scanned the first rock. Okay, the first two, but the run hardly counts. Normally, they wouldn't make any pronouncements until we'd gone through this entire group.
Seth paused.
Damn, Sprout.
Could you be right?
His voice rose at the end of the sentence in a kind of unconscious plea to the gods of chance.
An unscheduled general meeting is either really, really good news or really, really bad,
Ten commented as he walked up to their table.
Nothing's particularly happened lately that could be bad, so my money's on a positive scan. How positive is the question?
Since Ivan and Seth had been in the common room already, they refreshed their coffees and continued what they'd been doing. Working on a correspondence course in Ivan's case, and listening to an audiobook in Seth's. The rest of the crew arrived in short order, including those who had been asleep. The buzz of conversation and debate rose in volume as each person arrived. Opinions were split on the probable reasons for the summons. About half the crew shared Ten's opinion, the other half speculating that a creditor had panicked and called in their note. A palpable aura of both anxiety and anticipation settled over the crew lounge as they waited for the bridge officers to make an appearance. Finally, the captain walked in, followed by the first mate, Dante Aiello, and the geologist, Cirilla Heinrichs. Although she was technically crew, Cirilla's specialty required her to spend a considerable time with bridge officers. Everyone looked at Aiello, trying to read his facial expression, but Aiello was paying an extreme level of attention to his slippers, so no help there. Captain Jennings stepped to the front of the group and surveyed the crew for a moment. Then he did something captains of ships almost never did. He grinned unabashedly. The expression was infectious, and within seconds everyone was grinning back, despite nothing having been said.
Ahem, the captain began. We seem to have some positive results. Rock number one in this group, serial number AN2138.14, has multiple nodes of high density, along with pronounced magnetic reactivity. That means ferrous materials, Seth whispered to Ivan. I will, as is my duty, caution you all not to count your chickens until the samples have been taken and the core is assayed.
Assuming it's positive, what are we looking at?
Raoul Alfaro asked. Captain Jennings looked over at Cirilla, then back at the crew gathered in front of him.
Ms. Heinrichs has given me a preliminary summary of probable elements and tonnages, which is just a list of numbers, and I reiterate based only on the deep radar results, which are not definitive. However, to put it in perspective, if this plays out as the numbers seem to indicate, each and every one of you will be able to buy your own mining ship, cash.
The noise level in the room rose to a roar as the crew reacted to this pronouncement. A mining ship cost about the same as a Boeing 797 Super Jumbo. Granted, nothing had been said about being able to afford to run the thing, but still. Ivan caught a glimpse of Ten quickly wiping what appeared to be tears from his cheeks. It hadn't occurred to him that he might not be the only crew member with a reason to need a good result. Ten's earlier reluctance to mock him about the loan from Seth started to make sense. But that was a mystery for another time. Right now, Ivan had to deal with the realization that he had, on his very first tour, accomplished everything he'd set out to do. Debts would be paid, houses would be bought, and the kids would get the head start that he'd missed and they so deserved. And his family would never have to worry about finances again. Ivan's vision began to blur, and he had to perform some cleanup of his own.
There's something else, Cirilla said into the riot of conversation,
all sound cut off as everyone turned to her, faces registering sudden worry.
There's a satellite circling AN2138.14. We've been calling it Baby Rock, which has an anomaly of some kind. We detected a compact node of a density that would place it in the transuranic range.
Is that even possible? Asked one of the crew. Cirilla shook her head.
No. Which means it's bad data.
So, there might be nothing there? After the initial elation, this was almost unendurable.
No, there's something there physically. The readings on AN2138.14 are all within specs. I'm not suggesting equipment fault.
Cirilla looked at the captain, then back to the crew.
I'm just saying, we need to be cautious.
Loveliest of all women. Love of my life. We've hit pay dirt. The big one. They don't have specifics yet, but the word big keeps floating around. Also, rich, wealthy, holy shit. Don't let the kids read that. I doubt we'll stay out for the full tour. I will probably be back within the month. Start thinking about Christmas and about where we want to retire. Love, Ivan.
7. Tallying results. Lita Generis had no problem making eye contact today. The captain smiled at her across the table and raised his coffee mug in salute. She grinned back.
I guess we've made break even, he said.
Generis snorted and Cirilla Heinrichs laughed out loud. Normally her laugh was mildly annoying, but today nails on a chalkboard would barely register. The bridge officers sat around the conference table in the captain's ready room, several of them nursing coffees. Heinrichs, despite being halfway down the long side of the table, seemed to dominate the group as every other person in the room was turned to face her. The captain put down his mug.
All right. Enough suspense. Status report, Ms. Heinrichs.
Heinrichs made a show of getting comfortable, lining up her tablet on the table and moving her mug to just the right spot. She grinned at Generis when the latter made a growling sound.
I can only theorize that this chunk must have been a core fragment of some planetoid that formed in the early solar system. Most of the silicates and other surface comps are late accretions. It's very possible that under the top layer, this rock is an almost solid chunk of metal.
She paused to look around the desk.
Besides the expected iron and nickel, we've got a significant smattering of rare earths and a really strong showing from the platinum group.
No gold?
A little bit, sir. But with all this other stuff, the industrial conglomerates will be very interested. They tend to bid faster with fewer conditions and less concern about market saturation. I think we'll get a better, quicker sale than we would if the precious metals specialists were in charge of the bidding.
Jennings nodded.
Excellent. We'll need hard numbers for the auction, of course. Let's get the core samples done as soon as possible.
The captain looked at the first mate. Aiello smiled.
I predict much less grumbling than usual. As soon as Cirilla has the detail maps done, sir, we'll get started.
Before I forget, Mr. Mikorosky, deep sky scan?
No ships in the area, sir. The Sino-Soviet ships aren't especially stealthy.
Jennings nodded.
There hasn't been an incident since the free fall, but why take chances? Do at least one more full scan before we send in our claim, and make sure we're using the latest encryption when we do send it.
8. Pay dirt. A feeling of holiday pervaded the ship. Ivan's eyes widened as he looked over the crowd gathered at the airlock.
We need to name it, someone said.
Seth turned to the onlookers and grinned. Tell you what, why don't you poor rubes work on that while we're out there digging for gold?
He was met with several biologically unlikely suggestions for methods of storing gold, but they included no undertone of rancor. The chance of such strong readings being false positives ranked slightly higher than finding a leprechaun sitting on the gold, but only slightly. The atmosphere was one of jubilation,
and everyone was giddy with the possibilities. Even Ten was swept up in it. He slapped Ivan on the back.
Let's go get him, Sprout.
They cycled through the airlock to find the scooter waiting. Aspasia Nevin came in close and paid out a towing line. Ten took shotgun as senior crew member, and the others attached their safety harnesses to bites on the line. With exaggerated care, Aspasia took flight for AN-2138.14.
Seriously, Seth, it should be right over there.
Ivan glanced back and forth from the heavens to his heads-up display. The anomaly, by his estimate, was less than 200 meters away, in the small rock that orbited this much more massive asteroid, probably lightly buried under the dust and gravel that inevitably accumulated in hollows over geological timescales.
Don't care, Sprout. The anomaly might or might not come to anything. This clump below us, if it proves out, will allow us to each retire anywhere the hell we want. You see where I'm going with this?
Straight down?
Yeah, like that. And if you could find the time to come over here and help, I'm sure the whole crew would appreciate it.
Ivan sighed, and with an effort set aside his curiosity. He grabbed the Piton gun and spent a few seconds estimating distances. Then he laid down a pattern of anchors that would allow Seth to take several core samples from different angles. Seth set his drill in roughly the right area, then attached it to several pitons with cables on the drill casing. Small electric winches tightened the cables until the drill was held securely against the surface. Seth consulted Cyrilla's diagram for a few moments, then adjusted the drill's angle. A quick double check, and he pressed the start button. The drill made short work of the task, extracting a long cylinder of asteroid material. The mechanism ejected the cylinder out the back end, a process that was the butt of many jokes, and Ivan carefully sleeved the core and labeled it. As soon as they gave the all clear, Seth repositioned the drill for the next core. In less than 2 hours, they had a half dozen long cores extracted.
These don't even go halfway through the node,
Ten commented.
And if that isn't iron ore on the end there, I'll eat it.
No one needed to add anything. Mining crew knew what different ores looked like. They had to for this job. The deep radar was only good for the overview, not for the eyes-on-the-ground evaluation. Bundling the cores turned out to be more of a chore than expected, though, because other crew members kept getting in the way. Every time Ivan and Ten tried to sleeve a core, someone was there, poking at it, trying to identify the ore. Finally, Ten lost it.
Fuck's sake, you jackasses. We'll be out here forever if you don't back off. And by the way, I'm pretty sure there are more people here than are on shift. Since when do you volunteer for work?
Ten placed his hands on his hips and surveyed the crowd. He was probably glaring, but it lost something in a spacesuit.
Come on, Ten, we're just trying to...
Deep radar reading showed iron, nickel, platinum, palladium, and osmium. You heard the lady. What are you going to do, lick it to lay your claim?
Ten got some chuckles, and the group broke up to make room. Ivan and Seth were soon finished sleeving and labeling the samples. They wrapped the tubes with some bungees, and Seth held up the end of a tow cable. Aspasia grabbed the bundled cores from Seth, attached the clip to the scooter, then shot toward the Astra, showing nowhere near as much care this time.
Hey, Spazzy,
Ten called to her over the common channel as she disappeared rapidly into the distance.
Feel free to splatter yourself over a random rock, more for us.
There was no response, but the jets cut off abruptly. Seth turned to Ivan. This far out in the solar system, the helmet auto-shading hardly kicked in at all, so Ivan could clearly see his happy grin.
Okay, Sprout. We've got some time until Cyrilla completes her assay. Feel like checking it out?
Seth inclined his chin upward. There was no doubt what he was referring to. 9. Checking it out. Seth couldn't help chuckling to himself. The Sprout was like a puppy, with his eagerness and fresh-faced curiosity. Seth tried to remember if he'd ever been that energetic. Probably, but each tour wore a little bit of the edges off you. Especially the disappointing tours where you came back empty-handed, a half-year of your life gone with nothing to show for it. You returned from those with a little bit more of yourself ground off, a little bit more of the shape of you missing. After a while, you became like 10, just a walking, talking lump of cynicism and fake boredom. But today was a good day. Today was for adventure and dreams. Seth could almost hear Ivan vibrating with excitement.
Okay, Sprout, let's go. I'll lead.
Seth reached for his jet controls. They were about to launch themselves when 10 broke in.
And where do you think you're going?
Seth turned to face him.
Just a short flight to Baby Rock, no big deal.
This could be an alien artifact,
Ivan exclaimed.
Actually, what else could it be? A lot of things, Sprout. Get your knickers under control. Deep radar isn't foolproof, or they wouldn't need us. Plus, it was Robinson running the gear, and he's not very good.
Oh, ha-ha, Davies.
Even 10 couldn't ruin the air of celebration, and truthfully, his tone was lacking the usual hectoring. It was almost as if he considered it his duty to throw an insult or two.
Transuranix, she said.
Ivan replied.
Instrumentation error, I say. Tell you what, Sprout, let's put some money on it. I say it'll be some cast-off piece of human equipment, maybe with a shielded casing. How much are you willing to put up?
Ivan chuckled.
Fine, Ten, you've been trying to get me to gamble this whole trip. Today's your lucky day. But money's irrelevant now, so how about you taking kitchen duty the whole trip back against my desserts the whole trip back?
Ten hesitated for a moment. When he replied, his voice was friendlier than Seth could remember ever hearing.
Well, okay, then. Turns out the Sprout has some balls. You're on, Ivan.
The crew had been gathering around during this exchange, sensing the drama. The collective mood, already euphoric from the impressive core samples, continued to spiral upward, fed by the friendly competition.
Well, let's go look, then.
Ten continued.
I have to admit, I'm curious, too.
There were mutters of agreement from the other crew members. Seth shook his head slowly.
Damned party crashers.
He waited for everyone to get ready, then said to the group,
Follow.
With that, he activated his jetpack and headed for where his heads-up indicated the Baby Rock should be. The group got to the rock in less than a minute. It was barely 20 meters across, vaguely lentil-shaped and virtually motionless in space.
Weird that it has hardly any rotation,
Ivan said. Seth agreed, but knew that orbital mechanics produced many odd situations. This was no worse than most, and convenient, truth be told. They wouldn't have to worry about being tossed off the rock by centrifugal force.
So now that we're here, what are we looking for?
Someone asked.
Good question. Is Cyrilla's scan online?
Seth flipped through the available images on his suit's heads-up display, even as he asked the question. It took only a moment to find the right graphic.
Should be right at the bend in the lentil shape, the lowest point gravitationally.
Probably not a coincidence,
Ten replied. Ivan jetted over a few meters.
That's about here.
He unhooked his collapsible shovel and assembled it. Without waiting for consultation, he began digging.
Whoa, partner, Seth said. You sure you want to dig down to a lump of uranium?
Transuranix, she said.
Ivan looked up at Seth, emphasizing the first word.
Which is patently impossible, so I want to see what we... Hello?
Ivan looked oddly at his shovel.
You hit something?
Yeah. And it did not feel at all like rock. It gave a little. Like it was flexible.
As the other crew members crowded around, Ivan cleared the gravel and sand-like particulates from what looked for all the world like a walnut the size of a watermelon. Ten muttered,
We might want to be careful here, guys.
Ivan grinned.
Oh, come on, Tex. How bad can it be?
With that, he reached down to pick up the anomaly. 10. infection. There was a snapping motion, a blur, as if the object had abruptly changed shape. Ivan jerked, and suddenly, his right arm inexplicably felt hot. He looked at his spacesuit and saw a gray substance spreading onto his hand and forearm. Ivan's vision narrowed to a tunnel view centered on his arm. Scenes from horror movies, both old and recent, played in his mind. He heard a scream and realized an infinite time later that it came from inside his helmet. Davies' voice came loud over the radio.
This is Tennyson Davies. Mayday, mayday. We have a crew injury. We need immediate transport and medical standing by. What is your location and what is the nature of the injury?
Albert Mikorowski responded.
We're on the Baby Rock. Ivan Pritchard found the anomaly and something has glued itself to his arm. He's screaming, but we're not sure if it's pain or panic.
There was dead air for a moment, then Davies continued.
The scooter is coming into our position now. We'll tie up and let her tow us into the Astra. Stand by. The captain wants details, Mr. Davies.
The voice of the mad Astra's pilot was dead calm.
We dug up an anomaly that Cirilla detected on the Baby Rock. It was small, about the size of a basketball. Pritchard reached down to pick it up, and something came out of the thing and wrapped itself around his right arm. Is he in pain? Don't think so. He panicked when it happened. He's calmer now.
A small part of Ivan's mind, that little voice that insisted on ironic commentary on everything, noted that paralyzed with fear wasn't the same as calmer.
Mr. Davies, this is the captain. I want a video camera trained on the substance on his arm. Chief Engineer McNeil will evaluate the situation, and we will then decide how to proceed. Captain, we have to get him into sick bay so we can get this thing off. You have the order of events wrong, Mr. Davies. He will not be going into sick bay or coming into the ship at all until either the substance is removed or Mr. McNeil assures me it is safe. This is not a negotiable item. Yes, sir.
McNeil's voice cut in.
I'm sending a video camera and remote sensor over. Please train them on the anomaly when you get them. Sir.
As the conversation with the ship died down for the moment, Ivan tried to control his breathing. His mind began spinning through a panicked recitation.
No, no, I can't die now. Not when we've just hit it rich.
The ironic commentator in his head noted that at least this was a coherent thought, which was an improvement. He remembered reaching for the object. He remembered a snapping motion and something grabbing his arm. He remembered screaming and a jumbled collage of faces and spacesuits and rock and space. His arm prickled and itched maddeningly, but a small, rational part of his mind wondered if that was psychological. The stuff, whatever it was, didn't seem to add any weight to his arm. It could just be paint for all the difference it made. Shadows and reflections flitted across his visor as other crew members moved around him. Voices sounded over the intercom, but he couldn't make sense of them. His mind seemed to have shut down, leaving only a panicked, cornered animal, screaming and running in circles inside his skull. Someone placed their helmet in his line of sight. Their lips moved, and words came over the suit speakers. He tried to concentrate to make sense of the sounds.
Are you in pain? Is the stuff doing anything to you?
Ivan's eyes opened wider as the circuit breaker snapped back on in his brain and he recognized Ten's voice. He replayed the words, working to extract meaning.
No, I don't think so.
He took a deep breath and tried again.
No, pain. It doesn't really seem to be doing anything to me. It doesn't even weigh anything.
Ten nodded and grabbed Ivan's shovel, which was floating nearby at the end of its tether. He flipped it around expertly, then used the blade to scrape the substance off Ivan's arm. Or tried to. The grayish substance actually seemed to flow around the shovel blade, reforming behind it. It looked vaguely like running a paddle through water. Ten stopped, and the substance smoothed itself out. More gabbling followed, more sounds that Ivan's brain couldn't process. The universe presented like a disconnected series of still frames, similar in theme but not logically connected. The conversations had resumed. Unable to form a thought, let alone any kind of strategy, Ivan simply allowed himself to float in space, ministered to by the other spacesuits swarming around, while the radio chatter flowed over and past him. Duncan's voice came over the channel. The chief engineer had a puzzled tone, but no sense of panic or urgency.
It doesn't appear to be spreading, Captain. It's not particularly showing up on infrared. It seems to be thermally non-conductive. There's no radiation, no magnetic or electromagnetic activity. You'd think it was spray paint, except for the tendency to flow around attempts to scrape it.
Any conclusions, Mr. McNeil?
It appears to be at some kind of equilibrium, Captain. It's where it wants to be.
Doctor? Other than vitals from the suit monitors, I can't tell you much, Captain. Pritchard's heart rate and respiration are way up, of course, but nothing indicates anything other than adrenaline. Can anyone assure me that this is safe to bring into the ship?
Silence answered the captain's question.
Any suggestions for a resolution?
Dr. Kemp spoke up.
I might have one, Captain. We could cut off the suit arm. Amputate? Not the arm itself, sir. Just the suit. The gunk doesn't even reach Pritchard's elbow. We could cut the material above the elbow and strip it off. Will he lose the arm? No, sir, he shouldn't. The others can start spraying suit sealant on the arm as the fabric is being pulled back. That should protect the arm somewhat from depressurization. Suit sealant is for patching small holes in suits. To prevent hematomas on the skin, Doctor. How well do you expect it to work when it's covering an entire arm? It'll be better than nothing, sir. That's really all I can promise. People can survive vacuum for a short time. There's normally far more risk to the lungs, eyes, and ears. Worst case, he will probably suffer some bruising on the arm.
There was a pause before the captain addressed Davies.
Mr. Davies, do you have a fabric saw?
Yes, sir, standard kit.
All right. Understand that if the substance has penetrated through to his arm, he might be allowed to die out there. At your discretion, please begin. Ms. Nevin, be prepared to ferry him to the airlock with all haste, if results permit.
A series of yes sirs answered. Ten's face moved into Ivan's field of view.
Ivan, stick out your arm.
Ivan did so, and someone sprayed something on his arm. Then Ten ran something around his arm, and a ring of agony formed around his biceps. Two crew members grabbed his suit arm and pulled. The pain was beyond description, as if they were stripping his skin off. Ivan heard whimpering coming from inside his helmet. Finally, the pain stopped, and Ivan felt himself fade out. Seth peered through Ivan's helmet visor. The Sprout's eyes didn't look quite so much like white saucers anymore, and he seemed to be in better control. According to the suit's external readouts, Ivan was still hyperventilating a little, but the environmentals were keeping up so far. Seth was more concerned about some of the other crew members who seemed to be heading for panic attacks of their own. The doctor's plan would require careful coordination. If someone went off script at the wrong time, Ivan could die. Ten had the fabric saw out and ready. Based on the same concept as the saws used to cut casts off limbs, the composite blade of a fabric saw would decompose the material, but wouldn't affect flesh. He brought the saw near Ivan's arm, then gave orders to the crew.
Seth, you brace Ivan in the passenger seat so we can pull off the suit arm without dislodging him. Katie and Raoul, be ready to grab the fabric as I cut it and peel it back. Make sure the gunk doesn't touch you or anyone else. We'll be doing this all over again. Will, be ready with the sealant.
Ten looked around at the other crew members to make sure they were reacting to his orders.
Screw that.
Katie's voice rose in pitch.
I'm not taking a chance on that shit touching me.
Will cut in before Katie could build up to a full-on conniption.
We have lots of sealant. How about if I cover the gunk with it first? Then it can't get loose or touch anyone.
Good thinking, Will. Do it. Step back, everyone. Ivan, stick out your arm.
Ten gave a small push and drifted away from the group. A small spurt with his jets and he was motionless. The others followed suit, leaving the field clear for Will. It took only moments to cover the suit arm up to the elbow. Once the substance was covered, they moved back into position. Ten looked at Ivan.
Okay, Sprout. This is not going to be comfortable. But the doc doesn't think you'll lose the arm. And anyway, with the money from your share, you'll be able to get a new one grown.
Ivan nodded, clearly sweating profusely. The suit environmentals were starting to have trouble keeping up, and his visor was fogging.
And 3, 2, 1.
Ten ran the saw around Ivan's lower biceps as quickly as he could. The fabric edges pulled back on either side. Katie and Raoul braced their feet on the scooter frame and grabbed the forearm side of the cut. As they pulled, Will sprayed sealant from Ivan's shoulder on down. Ivan whimpered a little as different parts of his arm suffered decompression, but he held still for the entire operation. As soon as the suit arm was off, Katie thrust it to the ground and pushed gravel over it with his foot. The rest of the crew cleared off the scooter and Ten ordered Aspasia.
Go, airlock, immediately.
Needing no further prompting, Aspasia gave the scooter jets a spurt to get clear of the clump of crew members, then jetted toward the open airlock, where several people were waiting. 11. Recovery. The corridor outside sick bay was crowded. The captain had ordered everyone without a good reason to be there to clear out. Strangely, most of the crew had found a good reason. Or an excuse, anyway. Seth had made the claim, maybe only a slight exaggeration, of being Ivan's best friend and a source of moral support. The captain had raised an ironic eyebrow, but allowed it. Seth could hear Doc Kemp's and Ivan's voices muffled by the wall, but couldn't make out words. At least it meant Ivan was alive, conscious, and relatively calm. Seth took a deep breath. He felt an unreasonable degree of guilt for going along with Ivan's desire to dig up the thing. He should have known better. Whatever condition Ivan was in now, it was Seth's fault. The doctor walked out of sick bay and closed the door. He looked around at the dozen people crowding the corridor, then fixed his eyes on Captain Jennings.
I've given him a sedative. Right now, all he really needs is rest. His arm is a mess, but there's no obvious sign that the substance penetrated the suit. Everything is consistent with exposure to vacuum, bruising, hematomas, some scrapes from the rough treatment, a bit of chemical burn from the amount of sealant used. All things being equal, he'll be back to limited duty in a day or two and full duty in a week.
Can we see him? Seth asked. Maybe if he could assure himself that Ivan was okay, this feeling of dread would go away.
Not a lot of point. I gave him one of the stronger sedatives in my arsenal. He's out, and will be for at least 6 hours.
Just for a moment? Dr. Kemp looked at the captain, who nodded. With a bob of the head, the doctor indicated that Seth should enter sick bay. He held up a hand when the rest of the crew tried to follow.
Sorry, no, just the one.
Seth turned to his crewmates, nodded in what he hoped was a reassuring manner, and went through the door. Ivan lay on a cot, a white cream covering his entire right arm. His head was turned slightly to the side, his mouth hanging open. He wasn't quite knocked out, but he wasn't quite just sleeping, either. There would be no discussion today. Seth's crewmates straightened up as he came out, and several started asking questions at the same time. Seth held up a hand.
He's out cold, like the doc said. He looks healthy, except his arm's been through a ringer. I'll trust the doc on his prognosis for the arm. Let's just wait until tomorrow.
He followed the rest of the crew back to the lounge, his head hanging. It hadn't helped as much as he'd hoped. Ivan slowly came awake. This was his favorite part of the day, waking up by stages, warm in bed, brain not active enough yet to start cataloging the reasons why you shouldn't be so relaxed, the crappy apartment, the money troubles, the dead-end job. Maybe today was a weekend. No alarm clock. He would take the kids to the park. They needed to burn off the energy. Banging around in a 600-square-foot apartment just resulted in adult tempers flaring and children in time out. He frowned without opening his eyes. That didn't sound right. He'd done something, hadn't he? Joined the Navy? No. Joined a mining partnership. He was on the Mad Astra, and they'd just struck it rich, and he had checked Baby Rock, and he sat up immediately, sweating with fear. The thing had attacked him, grabbed his arm, but he'd been rescued by the crew, hustled off to sickbay. Everything was fine. His arm didn't even hurt anymore. Then Ivan looked at his arm. Dr. Kemp burst through the door, his eyes wide. Seeing his face, Ivan realized he'd been screaming. He cut off the sound with a snap of his jaw. The doctor grabbed a medical kit from the counter and stepped closer to the cot. Ivan held up his arm, and the blood drained from the doctor's face. Ivan looked at his arm again, hoping he'd somehow been mistaken. The reality was all but impossible to absorb. The arm was silver. No, not silver specifically, more of a chrome or titanium. From the tips of the fingers to about halfway up the forearm, Ivan's arm appeared to be coated with metal. The doctor grabbed a box of surgical gloves and donned two layers. He seemed to hesitate for a moment, then took Ivan's hand and began to palpate the fingers and knuckles. Ivan could see the expression on his face change. Kemp backed away from the bed, and Ivan thought for a moment he was going to run. Instead, he spun around and hammered the intercom button. "Astra, please wake the captain and request his presence in sickbay with all haste. We have a situation." 12. Investigation. "I've sedated him. Again, just a light dose this time. He's conscious, but calm." Dr. Kemp shook his head. "At this rate, I'll go all the way through my supply by the end of the week." "But what is it?" Captain Jennings asked. "As near as I can tell, it's a metal prosthetic, seamlessly integrated with Pritchard's physiology." Dr. Kemp glanced at Chief McNeil for a moment. "The level of detail and the technology apparent in the implementation are like nothing I've ever seen before." McNeil held up some small tools.
"I could get a sample?"
The captain looked at Kemp, who nodded. "After the chief gets his sample," Dr. Kemp continued, "I'll try a few things, like sonogram and X-ray. I've already determined that it's not affected by magnets."
"Does he have a pulse?"
"In the arm, you mean?" Dr. Kemp shook his head. "I'm not sure about how the interface is set up, but I doubt there's anything biological distal to the point where metal meets flesh." Captain Jennings frowned and stared at the sickbay door for a few seconds.
"What are our options, Doctor? Is amputation viable?"
"That's my go-to plan, actually, unless something comes up to rule it out. Pritchard can get a new one grown as soon as he's back on Earth. It's not like none of us can afford it now." Despite the gravity of the situation, the men shared a quick smile.
"All right. Use your discretion, Doctor," the captain said. "Keep me informed."
Ivan held up his hand. His flesh was chrome, up to halfway up the forearm.
"What is it, Doc? What's happening to me?"
"I've already described the physical aspect, Ivan, but the why and the how? I have no idea."
"This is from the stuff I got on my arm. It must be."
"It doesn't look the same. The stuff on your suit was grayish and liquid, but yeah, it's reasonable to conclude that the gunk caused this in some way."
"What do I do?"
Kemp pulled up a stool and sat in front of Ivan.
We don't know anything about this thing, and I don't think we can afford a wait-and-see stance. I'd like you to consider amputation. Stop it before it spreads, assuming it will spread.